You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
There's that sound. The sound of the start of another edition of the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thank you for joining us. Thanks for listening. I'm Mike Blewett along with George Kurtz. We'll be taking you around the horn in MLB for the next 2 hours, as well as touching on the NFL. George and I did a mock draft recently with the Roto Experts staff. We'll talk to you a little bit about some of the ramifications of that, how things played out. We talked a little bit about it yesterday. You can wait all day on a quarterback, and we'll get into the nitty-gritty of that a little bit later today. Obviously, there's a lot of things going on in the world, and hopefully we can be a respite for these next 2 hours as we talk fantasy sports and try to have some fun. And, George, I would say that yesterday was in a crazy day in the sports world, particularly in Major League Baseball. Grand slams abound. We had a no-hitter. A lot of exciting action yesterday in MLB.
Yeah, who would have thought that Edinson Volquez would be the player, first player of the season to get a no-hitter? I lost a good deal of money on that.
Yeah, he was 1-7 going into yesterday's outing, and he did it very efficiently, 98 pitches, and he gets through the D-backs, shuts them down completely, no hits them, 2 walks, 98 pitches. It was the least amount of pitches in some time, actually, since the last no-hitter by a Marlins pitcher who did it in a similar amount of pitches. So Edinson Volquez, your star of the day, and George, as you said, did not see that coming. Shuts down a pretty good lineup in the D-backs, too.
Yeah, I said Arizona's been hitting and been hitting well, and Volquez, I really just a great game. So I saw the highlights. I didn't watch much of the game. Only really one ball where it was a threat to be a hit, and D. Gordon made the play between first and second on that. So, hey, good vets of Volquez, but I don't think too many fantasy owners enjoyed it because I doubt he was started in all that many leagues.
I totally agree with you. As I said, the 10Ks. So on the flip side of things, Albert Pujols is a big highlight yesterday. He hits a grand slam for his 600th career home run. Kudos to Albert. It's been a long time to get there, but it usually is, George. It takes a long time to compile that. As we talked about yesterday, it's been a struggle for him, but he gets over the hump, and maybe he can ease up and stop thinking about this milestone.
Yeah, you have to think it was on his mind, 600 home runs and all that. Hit the grand slam of Irvin Santana, makes you wonder if Irvin Santana is now about to regress. Another bad outing by him. The home run by Pujols, I mean, man, he hit it high. You know, that's one of those that brought rain. You wonder if it was going to go foul, stay fair. That one I was watching live, as that was one of the late games last night, and I don't know what you're expecting from Pujols. Solid numbers the rest of the way. He's still in my lineup, more of a corner infielder than a first baseman. But as you mentioned, Mike, maybe now this is out of the way, he relaxes and hits just a wee bit better.
Yeah, Matt Shoemaker picks up the win in that contest. We'll dive into the box scores a little bit later. But additional grand slams, George. Kyle Schwarber, Matt Adams, Chris Taylor, who I want to talk about. And clearly, the guy putting on the early stages of his MVP campaign, Mike Zunino, 7 ribbies for the Mariners.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Get out your votes for Mike Zunino.
Well, George and I will talk about Mike Zunino and more after the break for the next 2 hours. We're the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. You can hit us up on Twitter today at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. George is at George Kurtz. Like I said, we'll be here for the next 2 hours. So, George, to dive into some games here, I wanted to talk a little bit about that Rays-Mariners game. Mike Zunino, he goes 3-for-4 yesterday with 7 ribbies. He hits the grand slam. The unfortunate recipient of all those runs was Alex Cobb, who came into the game at 4-4. He throws 5 innings yesterday, 14 hits, 9 earned, and 2 walks, George.
Yeah, that's pretty ugly for Cobb. I mean, Cobb's not someone you want. He's on fantasy teams, but he's not the pitcher he used to be before the injuries. We're sort of still building him up. I mean, I wonder if he can be you know, sort of 80% of that guy eventually. But right now, he's a place filler on your fantasy team. Yeah, he's going to have a good start every now and then. Pitches in Tampa Bay, so once again, good pitchers ballpark. But then again, so was Seattle yesterday, and that didn't work out well. The funny thing in that game, you know, Robinson Cano and Seager didn't do any of the damage.
Very true. On the Tampa Bay side of things, despite the fact that they got blown out 9-2, Corey Dickerson and Logan Morrison chip in with homers, and Morrison off of Edwin Diaz, who was just trying to get an inning of work, and he couldn't escape the inning without giving up a homer.
I always see that all the time. Is that the most frustrating thing?
It's terrible.
Comes in either a mop up or a non-save situation.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, if you need the work, you need the work.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden he gets lit up. It's always extremely frustrating for a fantasy owner.
Yeah, but kind of crazy. Corey Dickerson continues that pace, 342, and the homer yesterday. As we said, Zunino with the 7 ribbies. Valencia, 4-for-4, 3 runs scored. As you said, Cano, 0-for. Victor Cruz did do some damage, though, 3-for-4, 2 runs scored. He hits another homer. George, you talked a little bit yesterday about him being banged up, but you know, when we're taking a look at a snapshot at Victor Cruz with that lineup being totally banged up around him. He's lost Segura. He lost Cano for a stretch. Haniger's been gone forever. He's hitting .293, .927 OPS, and that's his 13th homer yesterday. So Nelson Cruz is really delivering.
Yes, it is Nelson Cruz. It's Victor
Cruz.
Did
I say Victor?
Football.
I knew it. I had a feeling that I said, gosh, I'm starting to get into football mode. I'm writing articles now, so I apologize, but Nelson Cruz.
Yes, today will be a very busy day for articles, actually. Nelson Cruz, he was banged up for a bit. There was some worry that he might go on with DL. Apparently, that's not going to happen. Hit the home run yesterday. I think he had a double as well, but nice game for Nelson. He's a pure hitter. I mean, he's just a pure hitter. Surprised this season he fell a little bit in draft rankings. For some reason, they're having a good year last year. People didn't want to take him as much. But Cruz is what Cruz is. He's going to hit his home runs, going to drive in his runs. Very solid professional hitter.
I just felt like the last couple of years in drafts, Nelson Cruz, people are trying to get out a year early on him as opposed to having him for the year that it tails off. But he's produced the last 4 years. He's the only guy in the majors that had 40 homers the previous 3 seasons. And sort of on pace to have another big power year this year. Sam Gaviglio picked up the win yesterday, George, for the Mariners. As you've mentioned many times, this rotation has fallen apart quite a bit due to injury, but Sam Gaviglio, one of these guys coming in, and gives him a decent start, even though he throws 5 innings. Only throws 5 innings, he gets the win.
Right now, I don't think they're complaining. They'll take 5 innings at just about any starter. Paxton did come back during the week. Felix Hernandez is on his way. It looks like maybe could be next week or the week after that he'll be back as well. So the rotation is getting healthy, but you wonder if Seattle just dug themselves way too big a hole here.
Yeah. Moving on to another game. Dodgers Brewers, a lot of runs scored in this one. Rich Hill went out there yesterday for only 4 innings, did not factor in the decision. The Dodgers do win 10-8 and went up against Matt Garza, who also threw only 4 innings. Kind of funny, a lot of the damage was done here against the bullpens with the starters not going very long in this game. Grand slam from Chris Taylor, and this is the reason I wanted to go to this game next, George. He played center yesterday. Did Chris Taylor. I know he's got sort of multi-position eligibility in some leagues, but right now, when you look at it, we're 40-something games in. He's hitting .328, .425 on base percentage, 7 homers, 23 RBIs, .985 OPS. The numbers are pretty amazing. We're getting huge production out of Dodgers players that maybe at opening day we didn't expect much from in Bellinger, Taylor, and others.
Well, Bellinger, I think we did expect from him. The only thing about Bellinger, we didn't know if he'd got playing time.
Right.
He was a first baseman. They had Adrian Gonzalez there. Then he comes up. He plays a little bit of outfield. Bellinger's been fantastic. I know we talked yesterday. The average has fallen a little bit, but I don't think that's all that big a surprise. Sooner or later, major league pitchers were going to make an adjustment. Now he has to make it back. And now they bring up Chris Taylor. I mean, and he's doing damage as well. The only thing about Taylor, once again, third baseman, Justin Turner is close. You know, he may be back within a week, 10 days. So what happens when he does return? Do they move him around? So I might worry about that. You're enjoying it while he's hot. 7 home runs, 23. He's playing great. He was stealing 3 bases. So he's hitting all the categories for you. No doubt he's in your lineup for now. But long term, the Dodgers are sort of an embarrassment of riches. What are they going to do when Justin Turner does come back?
True. A lot of guys, a lot of mouths to feed there. I would also note that the Dodgers scored 5 runs in the 9th inning to come back and win this game. They were losing 8-5 going into the 9th inning, so not really a great game there for Carlos Torres, who blows the game, takes the L on that one. On the Brewers side of things, obviously they did some damage as well. VR, nothing here. Shaw. So Travis Shaw is the one who has the big day yesterday. He goes 3-for-4 with 4 RBIs. So there you go. I don't think he hit a grand slam, did he? Hey, that would be another one? God, I don't think so. No. I think it was a... Yeah, another one. Gosh, I'm trying to make a list of all the grand slams yesterday. Travis Shaw, add him to the list. To Pujols, Schwarber, Zeno, Taylor, Adams, and now... Travis Shaw. It's crazy. How many grand slams? Is that a record? Like, how many grand slams were hit yesterday? Am I missing any? That's at least 6. That's a tremendous amount. It seems like a lot for one Saturday, no?
It is a lot for one Saturday. I'm going to say if it was a record, we probably would have heard about it.
Yeah.
I don't know if it is offhand, but I think if it was somewhere along the line, they would have publicized that. So I'll say no.
Okay. So moving on to another guy that made a debut yesterday, George, and that is David Price. And while he didn't throw the no-hitter that Edison Volquez did, for those of you that patiently awaited David Price, you got a really solid outing. 7 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 3 hits, 7 strikeouts. George, you cannot ask for anything better to kick off the season for David Price.
Well, he pitched earlier in the week, so it wasn't his debut.
I'm sorry. My bad.
Second start. First start was okay. This one was actually very good against a Baltimore team that can hit, right? I mean, they got some hitters there, Chris Davis, Machado, Trumbo, all those other guys. I think the good news here for a Baltimore fan, Machado hit another home run.
Yes.
Machado's been in a major, major slump. I think I was talking with Chris Mitchell on the podcast, played him a name later the other day, and we were worried about Machado. Because not only was he not hitting, but he was looking awful. In that Yankee series, he didn't look like he could hit a balloon that was coming up there or a beach ball. He was waving at pitches he shouldn't be waving at. And it wasn't like he was facing this. He wasn't facing Dellin Betances up there. You know, he was facing the Yankees, you know, secondary relievers who really, he really should have no problem handling, and he looked awful. So maybe facing the Red Sox, a team that kept throwing at him over and over and over again, has sort of forced him to focus. And maybe that'll turn his season around because, like I said, I think coming into the Boston series, he was batting .205, and that just can't happen.
Yeah, it's killing my average in my one league. I've gotten some trade offers for him, but he's not the type of guy I would ever sell low on. I don't want to take the beating from a slow start and not reap the benefits of when he starts tearing the cover off the ball. And hopefully that is now. I think he hit a home run on Friday and now another home run yesterday. So hopefully he's turning things around. Craig Kimbrel picks up his 16th save of the year, George. He's obviously been lights out for a majority of the year.
He's been fantastic. I don't think a right-hander's gotten a hit off him yet. That's how good he's been. Yeah, I think he's your right now. I think he would, be an all-star closer in the American League. He's been that good. And Kimbrel was a guy who last season didn't pitch all that well. Didn't really pitch poorly, but we thought we saw decline. Where, okay, he's up there in eighth, losing the fastball, losing location within the zone. He was walking a lot of pitchers, and even the pitches he was throwing well were right down Broadway, and they're being hit. So he has come back and come back with a vengeance to give Boston almost pretty much a lights-out 9th inning.
Yeah, and on the Dodgers side of things, I neglected to mention that Kenley Jansen picked up his 9th save, as we talked about. He's been, you know, near perfect, but he hasn't had the save opportunities. But as the Dodgers have been playing better, Kenley Jansen may start racking up these saves that you've been waiting on all year.
Yeah, the Dodgers are starting to hit their stride now, and they might run away with that division. That wouldn't shock me at all. So much talent there. I mean, you talk about the injuries in their starting rotation, but they got so many starting pitchers, it doesn't matter. Hill gets hurt, McCarthy pitches, Ryu pitches. You know, and they still got Kazmir coming along as well. A lot of depth in that Dodgers organization.
Alex Wood obviously missing a couple of starts as well, and, you know, we're just able to fill in wherever. Depth all over. We talked about Taylor and Bellinger and Turner coming back, and not just the starting rotation, but the positional players. They haven't been in as rough a position regarding injuries as a lot of the other teams out there. So we'll keep talking about some of these games. We got Tony Cicada coming up next hour to talk DFS, but George and I are going to dive into his article, Who's Not, Who's Hot, and Who's Not, next on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back on the Roto Experts in the morning, Mike and George until 10. I would encourage you to go to the Roto Experts where you can see George's article, Who's Hot or Who's Not, which we review every Sunday. And you can find that in the exclusive Edge in-season fantasy baseball package. It's your ultimate bench coach for the 2017 season. Stay ahead of the pack with our in-depth statistical breakdowns, trend analysis, and player insights. Become a waiver wizard and learn how to scan the numbers like a roto scientist. We'll help you set ideal lineups every week. And this season, you get a built-in fantasy training staff with our new injury advisor powered by InsideInjuries.com. So get the RotoExperts.com exclusive Edge in-season fantasy baseball package now. Start soaring to the top of the standings. Enter promo code FREERADIO at checkout for a special discount. We're in the process of putting together the NFL draft, exclusive Edge draft package. So George and I are contributing to that. I'm doing offensive lines, coaching changes. George is doing new faces, new places, and a couple other things. So George, we'll get into your article in a second. But I did confirm that yesterday was, in fact, a record for Grand Slams hit in one day, and we missed one player. Ian Desmond also hit a Grand Slam. So the list is Pujols, Schwarber, Zunino, Chris Taylor, Matt Adams, Travis Shaw, and Ian Desmond. Seven players hit Grand Slams yesterday, an all-time record, beating the previous record of six, which was set on May 21st, 2000. And the players involved in that one, George: Garrett Anderson, JT Snow, Bryant Hunter, Jason Giambi, Sean Green, and Adrian Beltre. Beltre obviously still active, but a little blast from the past from some of those names.
Yeah, you know, how many Grand Slams were hit yesterday?
Seven.
And what were those names again?
Pujols, Schwarber, Zunino, Taylor, Adams, Shaw, and Desmond.
I don't know if I have them in any league. Not one.
I don't have any of these guys either. That's good. That's good. So you swung and missed on seven at a minimum of 28 RBIs.
Yeah, I think I'm over seven. I might have Pujols as a corner infielder. I'd have to check, or I don't know if I'm getting last year confused. A lot of the guys there, nobody has. I don't know.
You saying Zunino is not heavily owned?
I don't think Zanino's heavily owned. I think Desmond people have, obviously. Taylor people picked up, so people would have him. And I don't remember the other name.
Schwarber's been dumped by some
Schwarber's
people.
Schwarber has. He's been dumped lower in the lineup, too, for the Chicago Cubs. So and I don't have him in any leagues. I wasn't paying the price at draft time that people wanted for him. So, yeah, I may be going for a donut there.
Yeah, Adams, Travis Shaw, probably not widely owned. Matt Adams, some of the people.
Don't have either one of those two.
Yeah, so in any event, record-setting day yesterday. I knew it seemed like a lot when I was making the pre-show notes, but I missed Shaw and Desmond as I was just going through everything. But in any event, so that's the deal. But let's see if any of these guys made your who's hot or who's not list, George. That's what I really want to see.
I don't think so.
So George does a who's hot, who's not each and every week. Five who's hot and five who are cooled off here in the last week or so. But who's hot, a name that I feel like we have to analyze each and every year, and you're not really sure what you're going to get out of him. Shin-Soo Choo from the Texas Rangers. You said you almost did a double take when you saw that he was 34 years old. It doesn't seem like he's been around.
He was that old.
No, I didn't think so either. He hasn't been around that long, right? I mean, he wasn't in the minors here.
No, that's probably why his career started late here coming over from Korea, so that's probably why we think he's younger than he actually is. I'm just surprised. I looked up his age, and he's 34 years old. Didn't see that coming.
No, I wouldn't have thought that either, actually. But as you said, he's not going to be a superstar for the rest of the year, but over his past 14 games, three homers, 12 ribbies, and batting close to .300.
Yeah, he's hot. He's definitely the hot player. A guy who could be at the end of your roster, the end of your outfield alignment there. We start five outfielders. So he does have some value. But I don't see him being a guy you're going to want to put in your lineup game in, game out from here for the rest of the season. But he is hitting well as of right now. He's been moved up to the top of the order, so that's helped as well. Chu's been leading off. Andrews second, Mazzara third. They've all done some damage this week. I easily could have put Andrews here ahead of Chu.
You know, I was actually tweeting back and forth with Mike Florio, our very own Mike Florio, yesterday. And articles like this are helpful because right now I have six slots between the one DL slot and five bench spots. They are all currently filled with injured players: Duffy, Bedrosian, Britton, Segura, Haniger, and I'm missing somebody else. But in any event, I may need some guys like this. A little bit of better news on Segura yesterday. Jerry DePoto, the GM, kind of freaked out on Friday, said he might be out months. Now he's saying it might not, is probably not a month, going to take a couple of weeks. So that's better news. It's not good news, but it's better news than it was. So just a quick note on that front. So George Shin-Soo might be a guy that I need just in the short term to fill up for some of these injuries.
Well, absolutely. At this point, I mean, if this was a normal year where a lot of people are healthy and not on the DL, yeah, maybe he's not taking in too many leagues. But this is not a normal season. Everybody's on the DL. You mentioned I have more than one league where I have more guys on the DL than I have the bench spots and DL spots put together. So it's like I either got to release players or I'm taking a zero for that slot. It's been a very frustrating season.
Yeah, you kick off the Adam Wainwright segment with saying, remember at the beginning of the season when we all seemed to want Wainwright to just go away and retire? Well, he's not doing it. Adam Wainwright on fire.
Yeah, he's turned it around. And that, you know, good for him. You know, good for Adam Wainwright. He's figured it out for whatever whatever the problem was early in the season, he's made the adjustments. And he looks like the Wainwright of old right now. Now, I don't think he's going to be the Cy Young winner for the rest of the season, but he's no longer on a dump pile either. He's somebody who should be in your rotation. Because those starts that, you know, he had one start against the Cubs, they can hit. One start in Coors Field. We know what a nightmare that usually is for starting pitchers. And he's down there and dominated. Wainwright must start right now.
Astros, I think, have ripped off 9 in a row. And as you say here, everybody in the Astros could basically be on this list, but you're focusing on Alex Bregman right here.
Yeah, because he's another player who we, second-year player, or I think technically still a rookie, who we may have been concerned about while I was dropped to 8th in the order. And I don't know if that's going to pick up. As well as Bregman's hitting now, and he's certainly hitting the ball better, along with the rest of the Astros team, that entire team is just sizzling hot. I don't know if he's going to move up in that order, though. I mean, you think about it, who does he take? Whose place does he take? They're all hitting. So at the beginning of the season, he was second in the order. Now he's down to 8th. And you want to see that move up. Yeah, of course you do. But I don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon. But Bregman is somebody, once again, back in your line. If someone there's an impatient owner, let him go. Go grab him.
I mean, he took an 0 for yesterday. But as George said, he's been on fire. And here's the lineup yesterday. Springer, Reddick, Altuve, Correa, Beltran, Gonzalez, McCann, Bregman, Aoki. So that's kind of what you're looking at. A lot of names up there that he's not going to move in front of. As you said, Beltran hit a big homer yesterday, 3 RBIs on his day yesterday for Carlos Beltran as he went 3 for 5 and hit his 7th home run of the year. Altuve hit a homer as well in that game, his 8th of the year. He went 3 for 5 with 2 runs scored and the ribby. So you mentioned Elvis Andrews too. He had another big day yesterday, by the way. 3 for 4, 2 runs scored, and 3 ribbies. So Elvis Andrews, you mentioned Shin-Soo Choo. You could have put Andrews on there. Andrews had another good game yesterday.
Yeah, he's another guy. Happy moved to 2nd in the order, showing power and speed, driving in runs. I mean, listen, Texas is doing what Texas does. They're scoring. They're hitting. This is not really a surprise. It's the reason why we like Texas players. Ever since Beltre came back, they seem to be even hitting even more. So whether that Beltre has lengthened that lineup out or just made people feel better, whatever it is, you know, they're hitting. Joey Gallo's not. So that could be sort of a concern. But then again, Gallo, well, he's not. He's either a home run or not.
Yeah.
It's why I think he's so hard to roster, because if he doesn't hit a home run, he is such a drain on your average that he's really tough to roster.
Yeah, agreed. Now, just quickly on Andrus, as we take a slight departure, did you have, I mean, you didn't have these kinds of expectations for him, but did you have any kind of solid expectations for Elvis Andrus this year? He's hitting 305, 7 homers, 32 ribbies, nearly a 350 on base, and over an 825 OPS. I mean, he's exceeding expectations, I would imagine, for you and many other people.
I guess you could call it exceeding expectations, but he's a player where, A, I thought he was a must draft. He's either if he's not your starting shortstop, he's certainly a middle infielder. Mm-hmm. So he's somebody I had no problem taking because I thought he was solid, plays in Texas, had a good year last year. I mean, some people may have thought that was sort of a fluke, that maybe he wouldn't be able to do that again. He's proving that wrong. Yeah, when he signed that big contract, and everybody's like, oh, my God, he's getting so overpaid. You know, Texas might move him, but no one was eating that contract. Well, he's showing everybody that maybe you should have thought about taking him on. He's not one of the big guys. He's not Carlos Correa, you know, or any of that buddy of that ilk. You know, Corey Seager, he's not. But, you know, he's not someone who we I think that we've dismissed him too quickly as just a speed guy. He can do more than just run.
I agree. I've found him to be an underrated player, and good for him having a solid season. Moving back to the list, Adam Schebler from the Cincinnati Reds. Who you say here, quick, who leads the National League in home runs? It's him with 16.
Yeah, I don't think too many people would get that offhand. I don't think anybody saw that coming. Not surprised that that it's a Cincinnati Red. You know, once again, playing in that bandbox, but that he actually leads the National League in home runs, that's a little bit of a surprise. When was the last time two rookies led their leagues in home runs? As Aaron Judge leads the American League, so that's a little, you can go look that up. One thing about Shebley, left the game with a left shoulder strain yesterday, so that's concerning. He hurt it while making a diving catch in the outfield. We don't know yet how long he'll be out, if it's serious or not serious. He's considered day-to-day right now, so if he doesn't play today, that's why. And we'll see what happens with him if he ends up on the DL. Shoulder injury as well, you wonder if that affects the swing and maybe zaps some of that power.
Do you think if he comes back, say he's healthy, this is nothing? Is he one of the guys that'll be, you think this is somebody the Reds would be looking to move as they continue this sort of, in you know, moving on from certain players, or is Schebler somebody that's going to be around for a bit?
Really depends on what their value of him was. He's somebody who sort of came out of nowhere. He's not a veteran. He's 26 years old.
Yeah.
So he is somebody they could theoretically, that could help build them a better team. He's not someone you build around. So I think they listen to offers, sure.
Yeah. We'll come back. We'll talk about who's not hot and Matt Holliday, who is. It's Mike and George. Back after this on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, talking about Matt Holliday. Back here on the Roto Experts, George and I talking about who's hot, who's not. You know, George, he's not in your article, but a guy that is not hot based on yesterday's performance is Jason Grilley. He pitched 2/3 of an inning yesterday. He gave up 4 hits. He gave up 4 earned runs, and all 4 of those hits were solo homers to Brett Gardner. And then he got a couple of players out, and then Matt Holliday, Starlin Castro, Didi Gregorius go back to back to back. So a rough outing for Jason Grilley yesterday.
Yeah, I think the funny thing about that that eighth inning was that Aaron Judge batted in that inning. Yankees hit 4 home runs. Judge didn't hit one of them. Judge actually struck out looking on a high fastball in that inning. Yeah, Grilley wouldn't be in the article. He's not a closer. I actually try and stay away from closers in that article since I write the closer report on Tuesday.
Makes sense.
I don't want to write about the same player twice. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's where I hit the relievers there. Well, but, yeah, Grilley's been awful all season. Not just yesterday. He's been pretty bad. I think his ERA was 6-plus coming into the game. Ask me if you wonder if eventually he's going to find himself on the unemployment line.
Yeah, DFA may not be far away. After an outing like that, it's not. Wouldn't be a surprise to see him get released in some ways. But the reason I brought it up is because Matt Holliday was one of those guys, and Matt Holliday is on your list of who's hot.
Yeah, Holliday's been a great signing by the Yankees.
Really
not
was.
Not just because he's hitting, but because he's a professional hitter who's sort of taking the Yankees under his wing, especially Aaron Judge. They say you can always see find Judge. Wherever Holliday is, you can always find Judge. Holliday's always giving him advice. And it's obviously paying off. No, it's not. I mean, I'm not just saying because Judge has 18 home runs, but because of the adjustments that we've seen Judge make. You know, Judge has he's been known for each level to make the adjustments where, you know, pitchers get him out right away, and then he makes the adjustments and starts crushing him. You saw last year. What was he doing wrong? Swinging at pretty much everything. All those outside curveballs, changeups, sliders, he was waving at him. Made the adjustments during the offseason. Even made the adjustment during the beginning of this season to lay off those pitches. I think the biggest adjustment for Judge has been swing early. If they're throwing strike one down Broadway, swing at it. Take a hack. Hit that pitch. And I think a lot of that's Matt Holliday telling him that. You don't need to wait till you have 2 strikes before you swing the bat and be aggressive. So I think Holliday's been a great signing. He's hitting a ton. And the Yankees, DH, American League, he doesn't have to worry about playing the field. He is staying healthy. They did try him a couple games at first base. I think that experiment is over.
By the way, he's a beast. I know Judge is a monster and he towers over everybody, but Matt Holliday's 37 years old. He's 6'4". 240. He looks in incredible shape. I have to give him a lot of credit. He's hitting cleanup in the Yankees lineup every day. As you said, DH really helping him a lot. But a lot of those numbers that you thought might look kind of wonky for him at the end of the year aren't right now. You know, he's got a 363 on base percentage. His OPS is 889, so he's maintaining some of these other numbers, and he's not pulling off what Joey Gallo is doing. You know what I mean? Just swinging for the fences and throwing caution to the wind. You know, he's getting on base. He's being a consistent producer in this lineup. I found it odd that I think people expected Holiday to maybe fall apart, or they didn't really know what we were going to get out of this signing as a Yankees fan. But here he is. As you said, you can't ask for better production than what he's given them.
No, I think he's been one of the better signings of the offseason for anybody. He's been that good. I think we were worried about somewhat about his production, and he did look like maybe he was declining with St. Louis. Always hurt, but the Yankees were able to alleviate that by they just don't play him in the field, and they don't need to. I mean, you got the four outfielders, Judge, Gardner, Hicks, who's been – you can make an argument Hicks would be an all-star. Ellsbury was playing okay as well before the concussion, and he's had a relapse, by the way. No idea when he's coming back. So right now the Yankees don't need to put him out there, and that's good for everybody because I don't think you want Holiday playing the field at all.
Agreed. So moving over to who's not hot, Michael Franco. The Phillies have stated they won't send him to AAA. He's batting only .216 and has six homers. I read some really curious things earlier this week, George, about how Mackinnon, the manager, was handling it, and he kind of puts these players on ice. Like, he just benches them, doesn't say anything about it, and then they're languishing for a couple of days wondering if they're going to get back in the lineup. Obviously, Franco hasn't earned a spot this season, but I read a little bit to match up what you said here about Franco, about how cold he is.
Yeah, he's been awful. I mean, so is Herrera. By the way, I was debating which one of these two to put in there. I really don't like putting two guys from the same team on the same list. So I could have put Herrera in there as well. I think Herrera is technically been even doing worse. Franco, though, I mean, what we expected big-time power numbers from him. He's got seven home runs, I believe. In that ballpark, he should certainly have more. Not batting for average either. I mean, neither one should be in your lineup right now. You can make an argument that neither one should be on your team. That you should have moved on by now and found somebody else. I think they will start hitting eventually, but if you're right about the manager as well and the communication's not there and the team's losing game after game, that's not going to be a fun clubhouse whatsoever.
It was one of the strangest articles, and Mackinnon was like saying, yeah, you know, these guys want to come talk to me, they can come find me. They know where my office is. It was that kind of attitude. And I'm like, he's not a rookie. He's struggling. Why don't you just sit down with the guy and be like, hey, maybe we get you a couple days off, get a rest, get your head back together, and we'll start again. Franco seemed to handle it okay, but it was a very odd approach for a team that, as you said, isn't expected to win a lot of games. You're going to start ticking off the guys that are veterans and have contributed in the past. It's just a very odd tactic for me. As you said, he's young, but still, he's been on this team. It's not his first rodeo. Beyond that, he went 2-for-4 yesterday, so hopefully it's the start of something good. Andrew McCutchen, Pittsburgh Pirates. George, as you said here, it's hard to know what to say about him.
Yeah, he's been disappointing. I mean, we sort of hoped last year was sort of that he was playing through injuries. The knee injury is bothering us, so maybe that was the reason for the down numbers. I mean, he had 24 home runs last year. He's on pace for about the same this year. And he's stealing some base, but the average is deplorable. He's not driving in any runs. I don't think this is all his fault, mind you. I think the team around him is pretty poor, especially offensively, outside of Josh Bell. And maybe, you know, Freeze has had a good start to the season. But Marte being getting suspended for the performance enhancers was disappointing, to put it nicely. It seems to be put a whole kibosh on the team. I wonder if a change of scenery needs to happen here. But, I mean, it's going to be a dilemma for the Pirates because you're trading it. Really, a player who was an icon for them who now is, you know, is he going to turn it around for a new team? Or is the new team going to want to pay up to acquire him? What kind of player is he? You know, I don't think anybody knows that right now. Are you going to sell low on him if you're Pittsburgh? So I don't – this is just a bad situation all around.
Not making excuses for him. He's only 30, and he is now 2 years removed from what was a very productive season in 2015. He batted .292, 23 homers, 96 ribbies, et cetera, et cetera. His OPS was .889 then. I wonder if it's because there's been so much talk for a while about him moving on. I'm not giving him excuses for all of the last year and change, but I think a change of scenery is in order, and I think it would help him, and I would have some level of expectations for him after he moves. He's not 37, George. Like, this isn't the end of his career. He can still play, and I just wonder if the uncertainty has been in his head for far too long.
Could be. I mean, and once again, it could be. I don't think it should affect him. As we've been, he's 30s. This is a veteran who's been around for a long time. I don't think it should affect him. I wonder if these injuries have just zapped him. You know, eventually these things add up. He's not a big guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's really nice. He's really a slender guy, more of an athletic guy than a big-time bruiser. So I just wonder if these injuries have added up.
He's listed at 5'10", 195, to your point. That's pretty small.
Yeah, and I wonder if he's that. You know, as far as maybe he's in a little, especially as the season wears on, he wears more into the 180s range. But either way, like I said, I think the biggest problem with Pittsburgh is if you were to trade him, you know, he's one of the favorites of the fans, of the media there in Pittsburgh. If you were to trade him, you need to bring back a pretty good haul, and I don't think he can do that right now. Who's giving them a top haul for Andrew McCutchen? A 220 hitter with, you know, he's got 8 home runs, batted with 24 RBIs. Who's giving that top money to who maybe can't play center field? Because remember, they don't want him playing center field. Marte would be out there if he was healthy. They don't think he's a center fielder anymore. So he has, who's maybe lost a step? Who's paying top price for that? I don't think anybody is.
No.
So it's going to be hard for them to justify dealing him to the fans and the media when maybe, you know, the fans and media want you to trade the player that he was 3 years ago, not the player he is now.
Yeah, George, we have a lot of expectations for big-time prospects when they come up. But I always feel like people need to be realistic about rookies on some level. And Andrew Benintendi is struggling right now. We had, you know, he's hitting in the middle of the lineup coming up here as his first full season coming out of the spring. But his last 30 games, he's hitting .214. His last 14, only .205. And the last seven, it's .53. He hasn't hit a home run since May 7th. A lot of compelling stats there for you to prove your case about how cold he is.
Yeah, he's ice cold. He's just ice cold. They've dropped him in the order. He hasn't. He's sat now 3 of the last 4 games against left-handers, even though Boston swears that he's not a platoon player. Okay, he's sat him 3 or 4, so I guess technically he's not, but obviously they have concerns. They're trying to snap him out of it. Surprised. I mean, coming in, he was almost everybody's number one prospect coming into the season. Technically, he's still a rookie. So he was on everybody's number one list. You know, hitting in Fenway. Does he miss Ortiz? You know, is that the problem there? It's funny. I just got a question on my Twitter from John P. I shouldn't say just. Sorry, John. It took me a while to get to it. I was out all day yesterday. But he wanted to know, should he trade? This is actually a big trade. Keuchel, Manea, Arenado, and Pollock for Kershaw, Rendon, and Benintendi. And I hate to trade Kershaw. Hate to trade Kershaw. But in this case, I think you do have a deal. I said, I don't think anybody's untradeable. If the deal makes sense, you make the deal here.
He's getting rid of Kershaw? Keuchel...
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You could make an argument that Keuchel and Kershaw are almost a wash. Kershaw's better, but they're close to a wash. And you're getting Arenado and Pollock. Arenado's better than Rendon or Benintendi. And Pollock as well. You get Minaya's little boost. I'm going to do that deal.
Benintendi, frustrating. Obviously, in keeper leagues, he's not going anywhere. But in these leagues where you're trying to stream other players, you may need to sit them on the bench here for a little bit. We'll talk about Masahiro Tanaka and Randall Krajicek when we come back. It's Mike and George on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network as we careen towards 10 o'clock for Fantasy Bagels and Baseball. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Joe, hope you're listening to us on the app. If not, please download the app at FNTSY. Sports Radio app. It's in the iTunes store on Google Play. You listen for free anytime, anywhere. You listen to us every Saturday and Sunday from 8 to 10. You have Tony Cincotta and Cha-Cha on after this, Fantasy Bagels and Baseball. So listen to them when you're running back and forth to church or to breakfast or wherever it is you're going. Beyond that, today we also have Fan Rag Fantasy Baseball. That's Al Melchior from 12 to 1 and then the producers from 1 to 3. I'm sure they'll be talking some hockey today. So please go and get the Fantasy Sports Radio app for free right now in the iTunes store on Google Play and take the experts with you. So George, Masahiro Tanaka, he's been on and off of teams in my league. He's been dropped and picked up and dropped and picked up, and I was the last one to pick him up thinking that maybe I'll buy low here after a really good outing against Oakland last weekend, I guess it was, or just before the weekend. He pitched really well, and then he comes out May 31st, which I believe was Tuesday, and he just gets bombed. 5 2/3 innings, 7 earned runs, 9 hits, and a couple of walks. Not looking good. His numbers on the year are putrid. It's 5-5 of the 6.3 ERA. He's got 56 strikeouts in 61 innings, but the whip is 1.5, and the ERA is through the roof.
I mean, you watch the games. The velocity's there. So the Yankees swear he's not hurt. Tanaka says he's not hurt. So you take him at the word. The velocity, he's throwing the ball 92, 93, 94, just his normal velocity. But the pitches are up in the zone. That's the biggest thing. He's just, they're up in the zone, and he's getting hammered. You know, so he's just not hitting his locations. It's been going on. I mean, he had a terrific spring training. I know spring training doesn't matter, but he was lights out during the spring. And then when the lights came on, he's just been horrendous. The Yankees have tried, maybe it's because Gary Sanchez, not the catcher for him. Even though his numbers with Gary Sanchez last year were 1.97 ERA in whatever, 12, 13 starts. This season they were bad with Sanchez, so they gave him Romine for a couple of starts. That's not the answer either. As a matter of fact, I think the way what Girardi's doing with Sanchez has been almost criminal. He keeps benching Sanchez 2-3 times a week. I don't get it. I don't know why he thinks Sanchez needs so much rest. But as far as Tanaka's concerned, I don't think the Yankees have any answers right now. Yeah, if it's not the catcher, if it's not an injury, well, then it's Tanaka. He's just got to pitch better. His next start will come against Boston this week. That could get pretty ugly pretty quick. But other than that, I mean, what else are you going to do? I mean, I can't start him. He's a guy, Mike, because of what you mentioned, I'll probably need to see 2 good starts from before I put him back in my lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I was desperate. Danny Duffy got hurt. I figured he might be a guy to fill in. But as you said, I might be better off. My ratios are already terrible with my starting pitching. So I may have to keep him on the bench until he turns it around. I'm happy to hold him for now. But
I believe he's a 2-star pitcher next week. But those 2 starts come against Boston and against Baltimore. No, thank you.
Yeah, I'm out. Randall Grichuk, you said he got sent down to high A ball. There's some pretty good expectations from fantasy people on Grichuk this year, and he is struggling mightily.
Yeah, I have him in multiple leagues, probably 3 or 4. I expect at least the home runs. Or I thought the power would at least be there. The fact that he sent them down to high A would seem to me they're trying to send him a message. I don't know what that message is. Try harder, take the game more seriously. You suck. I don't know what the message is there, but That raised some eyebrows there, sending him down to high A. Apparently, they're saying publicly it's for pitch recognition. Okay, he's striking out, so generally that's the problem when you don't hit, right? If you're hitting the ball hard, they're not going to send you down, so that's not a shock. But I guess they think he's a fastball guy. And you throw him anything other than a fastball, he can't see it, he's waving at it. You know, so not good for Grichuk. We've seen the same thing happen last year, I believe, as well. So I'm just about all out on Grichuk.
54 Ks and 167 at-bats, George.
That's not good. Not good at all.
It's a brutal percentage. So that's it. 1 hour up, 1 hour down. George and I turn the page, talk some football in the next hour. Tony Cincotta at about 9:40, talking DFS. We're heading on to hour number 2 on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Join us after the break on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Back for hour number 2 on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike and George, we are the Roto Experts. Hit us up today on Twitter. At FNTSY Radio, I'm at Mike Blewett. George is at George Kurtz. Talked a lot about who's hot, who's not right now. One player, George, that we failed to mention going through some of the games, and he's maybe a player that you can consider to be positive for some fantasy teams, but Jordan Montgomery has another solid outing yesterday. He doesn't give up a run in 6 innings, 3 hits, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts. You know, he's not a terribly experienced pitcher, but he's added some innings here for the Yankees and become a part of their rotation when people weren't sure if he was going to stick around when he first was inserted into it.
Yeah, if you watched the game yesterday, he gets in and out of trouble. He's got 4. He's a pitcher. He's not a thrower. He's a pitcher, so he's got a combination of slider, changeup, curve, fastball, and he uses them all. So he will keep you off balance. And, you know, he calmed down a good hitting Jays lineup. So it's actually somewhat of an impressive performance there. He is what he is. He's not going to go deep into games. He's generally a six-inning guy here. He's going to throw a lot of pitches because he's going to work the zone. He will walk some batters. So fantasy-wise, I think he's the kind of definition of a pitcher. He's going to be a better pitcher for the Yankees than fantasy because he's not going to strike out a ton. He is going to put some guys on base and wiggle his way out. Not a dominant guy, but a back end of your rotation filler.
He does have a surprising amount of strikeouts, though, for a guy that, as you said, is a pitcher. 53 Ks in 56 innings is a pretty positive indicator, yes?
Yes, it's close to a strikeout per innings pitch. He's the guy that probably you might worry that Chance Adams would take the job eventually, but he's not doing anything to lose the job. And I don't think he's going to be in any rush to call up Chance Adams, but Chance Adams is dominating every level he's at. He's ready to pitch in the majors. He just needs an injury to do it. Montgomery would be the one guy they could send down if he has a couple of bad starts, but yesterday was a fantastic start.
Yeah, do you think they'd be in a rush to do that, though? If Montgomery obviously continues to pitch well, can they keep Adams on ice, or are they going to be chomping at the bit to bring him up?
Well, how long could you wait on Tanaka?
I kind of agree, but he's not the guy that's going to get benched, is he? Like, you're going to move him to the middle relief?
If he gets racked up twice this week now against Baltimore, against Boston, I don't know if you have a choice anymore. I mean, at the very least, don't you put him on a DL, see if 2 weeks off helps him?
I'd do that before I put him in middle relief.
Make up an injury?
Yeah, I would do that before I put him in middle relief, just to see if it can sort itself out.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be in middle relief either. I think they'd have to do something. I think what they would do is, if let's say he does get racked up again this week, I think he also, you know, sore shoulder, sore elbow, whatever they want to call it, give him a couple of starts off, you know, a break, a midseason break, and then, you know, you put Chance Adams in for a couple of starts, and then you worry about it from there.
Yeah. As you said yesterday, he's been so bad that he can't opt out. It's not like I'm crying in my beer for him simply because the annual salary is pretty good without the opt out.
He picked the wrong year to have a terrible one.
Yeah, he did. All right, George and I'll come back. We're going to talk. We did a mock draft with the staff this week. We'll talk about it when we come back. Just take a look at how things are sorting out early in the draft process for the NFL. It's Mike and George back after this. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, George and I getting set to talk NFL. You know, a lot of you come in, listen to Escape the serious things in the news, and I'm right there with you. I do this stuff because it's a lot of fun. You can take my mind off of things, and obviously I listen to a lot of sports radio to do the same. But I'd be remiss if I didn't say my thoughts and prayers and our thoughts and prayers are with the people of London. It's another tragedy that they're dealing with. So hopefully they can heal from this and move on to better times this spring, this summer, and beyond. So that's all I'll say about that. George, in talking about, there's no way to make an easy transition off of that, but in talking about the draft, we touched on it a little bit yesterday. We got sidetracked with a million different things because of the Jeremy Maclin stuff and all that kind of stuff. But we did talk about how you can wait all day on quarterbacks now. You and I have talked at length at times about how doing one quarterback leagues right now in the NFL is a little too easy because you can wait all day. I think in this draft, yeah, I'm looking at how guys are drafted right now. My team auto drafted Carson Palmer in the last round, in the 15th round. I think we only did 15.
Thanks rounds. For taking 6 hours for that, Mike.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I forgot that we weren't done. I thought because George and I were on the turn, I thought I was done, but I forgot we had one last pick to do. It's not the pick that I wanted, but ultimately it picked Carson Palmer as a second quarterback. Now, I was one of the earlier guys to pick. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So Phil Rivers, I picked in the 8th round. I think it was the very end of the 8th round. And I could have waited even further because here's how it played out. First quarterback off the board, Tony Cincotta, Aaron Rodgers in the 4th round, Tom Brady in the 5th round, DeBrandon Murchison, Matt Ryan goes 3rd, Scott Engel in the 6th round. Then it's Drew Brees and Andrew Luck in the 7th rounds, George, to Frank Stanfill and Mike Waterloo, then me with Rivers. Right behind me in round 9 is Cam Newton, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota. In the 11th round, Jake Seeley takes Russell Wilson. In the 12th round, you took Kirk Cousins. And Ben Roethlisberger went after that in the 12th round. Derek Carr went after that in the 12th round. Eli Manning in the 14th, Matt Stafford in the 14th, then Dak Prescott in the 15th, and then I'm not even counting my Carson Palmer pick because I wouldn't have really picked him. I would have picked another tight end or something. So bottom line is, and there were other guys left out there, a couple of guys who I think could have been could be on the waiver wire that we expect might have some value. So the point is, God, you waited till the double-digit rounds to get a guy that could easily be a QB1.
Yeah, listen, I think I've made a point of it now in two drafts, the two mocks we've done for the Fantasy Sports Radio Network and for Roto Experts, that I will wait forever on a quarterback. I believe in the for the Radio Network in round 11, I got Marcus Mariota. And here, I think you said I got in round 12, I got Kirk Cousins. You can wait. You don't have to take quarterback early. I'm not doing it. There's no reason to. I'm sorry. I mean, I love Aaron Rodgers. You know, Drew Brees, Andrew Luck, Tom Brady. Yes, they're all going to have fantastic seasons. But why would I want to take them in round 4, round 5, when I can wait 6, 7 rounds later, load up on my wide receivers, load up on my running backs, and still get a top 10 quarterback easy? Not going to be a problem. Quarterbacks in a 4-point touchdown pass league, which is what most leagues are, the difference from quarterback 1 to quarterback 8 will not be enough. But the difference between, you know, a running back 2 and a running back 4 or running back 5 is going to be immense. You're going to need those guys. You're going to have injuries at that position more than the quarterbacks. You know, and even if you do believe your quarterback's going to get hurt, you mentioned there's still good quarterbacks out there on the waiver wire. You can go grab right now if we wanted to in this league. So you'd have your backup to cover yourself. Like I said, to me, it's just, I wouldn't say silly. You know, you want to hear Rodgers is great. You know, no doubt he's great. But this is also why, Mike, and as you started, if you're playing in a one quarterback league, you're playing in a non-strategic league because you're just going to wait on quarterbacks. It's the, you know, it's just, to me, it's coming close to the same as a kicker or defense. We know kicker or defense, you're taking the last two rounds. Quarterback, I'm going to take around 11, round 12. I'm just waiting. If you want more strategy in your league, more fun, go to a super flex league. This way you have the option of starting a second quarterback. And you might say, oh, there won't be enough quarterbacks to go around. Well, that's why you make it a super flex league. This way you can still plug in a wide receiver or a little running back in there. In a super flex, you do need to make it at least a half point PPR, and it probably should be a full point PPR. This way the running backs and the wide receivers do offset what the quarterbacks can do. But at this point, I just don't see – I so prefer super flex leagues. It's not even close.
Yeah, I'll be totally honest. I changed my tune. It was starting to move a couple of years ago, but by the end of the year last year, I had changed my mind. Tony and I did like an evergreen type of show that ran for a little bit about how moving forward that should be what people are looking at. Super flex leagues is what I prefer to straight up two quarterback leagues, but I think, as George said, it's taking the strategy out of it because QB play is too good now from a fantasy standpoint. Look, you and I can both complain about the state of affairs with NFL quarterbacks in general, but it is a very different conversation for fantasy. There's too many good numbers put up by guys that you can draft late. Look, when I drafted Phil Rivers in the 8th round, I was like, man, do I take Rivers now? I like him so much better than the other players. I really could wait a couple of rounds and take Derek Carr. It turns out I could have waited 4 rounds. I didn't even anticipate that. So, because he's another guy I like at value, certainly. Like, look at this. Derek Carr is more than the 12th quarterback off the board. I think he's a QB1 in 12-team leagues, and you can get him in the 12th round. So maybe that's a little bit pushback because experts kind of have been through this a few times, and we know that you can just wait. But ultimately, honestly, even in your home leagues, you can just wait. It's not going to impact you if you get the 12th quarterback off the board. It's not going to impact you that negatively. Are you missing out on Aaron Rodgers? Possibly, but you're also making up for it by maintaining some depth at the running back and wide receiver positions, which are frankly more important.
They are, because that's where the injuries are coming. You know, like I said, the biggest difference is, like I said, Aaron Rodgers is great, but the difference between him and your 8th quarterback, you said, Derek Carr, will not be as immense as you think it's going to be at the end of the season. They're both going to have great seasons. Yeah, Rodgers may throw 38 touchdowns, but Carr's going to throw 30. You know, the yardage total won't be that immense either. So, like I said, yeah, I want the running backs. I want the wide receivers. In a 2-quarterback league, it turns it all around. They don't draft the quarterbacks immensely early.
Yeah.
I'll check it. In a league where you draft 2 quarterbacks, odds are, especially with the 6-point quarterback league, I'm taking a quarterback in the first round. That's the way that works here, because you need those quarterbacks to win. But in a 1-quarterback league, there's just so many to go around. I mean, Not that they're all. I'm not saying all these quarterbacks are great. They're not all great, but they're all good. You know, I mean, you can just wait on any of these quarterbacks that you named. You know, Carrs, Cousins, Mariota. Even Stafford. I'll start any of these guys. Stafford was having a great season last year before the thumb injury. You know, he was immensely startable, and that team's going to throw a bunch as well. I don't mind having Stafford as my starting quarterback if it allows me to bunch up on all my running backs and wide receivers, because we know it's the NFL. Those are the guys that get hurt. And so many of those first-round running backs are going to get hurt. We see it every year. You know, your top 10 running backs, half are going to go down. You need to have depth there. And if you don't, that's where you're going to lose leagues. So like I said, it's easy for me. I mean, easy. It's not even close to me that I'm not taking a quarterback early.
I mean, Matt Stafford, as you said, he had the thumb injury. He still finished seventh in quarterback rankings if you're looking at ESPN Standard League. Tyrod Taylor was ninth. Derek Carr was 11th. You know, there was too much value. And Matt Ryan, by the way, finished second. And I could tell you for a fact that in an experts league where the Roto experts were in, Matt Ryan was undrafted last year. And he got picked up on the waiver wire because he had a massive week one. I think it was Adam Ronis, our former colleague, who picked him up off the waiver wire, and he reaped the benefits. I got Matt Ryan really late in a keeper league, and I'm going to reap the benefits this year as I did last year. So beyond that, just telling you, I think we beat that horse dead. You can wait on quarterbacks, and I would encourage you to get into super flex leagues and a 2QB league if you can find it. Running backs, and we'll continue to talk about this after the break, so we'll dive into it a little bit deeper. But running backs, this was a standard league, so they went off the board fast and furious. Five in round one: Zeke Elliott, David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, Melvin Gordon, Devonta Freeman. Actually, a sixth one in LeSean McCoy. I did screw up because this site that we used was a little wonky with rankings. My fault, but I screwed up. I probably would have taken a running back at 11. I ended up taking Michael Thomas, and then I got Jordy Nelson on the wraparound. I'm okay with that, but in a standard league, I would have preferred to have a running back there. You thought I went way too early on what's his name? Derrick Henry, which I took Mark Ingram in round 3. I took Derrick Henry in round 5. Clearly, DeMarco Murray is still going to be a big part of that offense. Do you think Derrick Henry just doesn't take over enough carries this season for him to be valuable that high in the draft?
Exactly. I don't know about way too, but you took him too early. I mean, DeMarco Murray's not getting enough love for whatever reason. Had a fantastic season last year. I expect him to do the same this year. That offense is only going to get better, which means teams can't load up the box against him. So I think DeMarco Murray is going to – I don't want to say he's criminally underrated right now, but he's certainly underrated. Although I've seen another draft where he goes in the first round, so maybe it just depends on your league members that you're playing with here. But Derrick Henry, I don't see his role changing from last season all that much without an injury to Murray. So like I said, I like Henry, but I think he's more of a handcuff to Murray than anything else. No way I would take him in round 5. There's got to be better running backs, which we'll take a look at after this.
Yeah. We're talking about DeMarco Murray, 346 touches last year. Maybe that's why some people are scared off. Mike and George back in a couple of minutes on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We are the Roto Experts in the morning, and I hope you go to Roto Experts and catch your exclusive Edge in-season fantasy baseball package. It's your ultimate bench coach for the 2017 season. You can get our in-depth statistical breakdowns, trend analysis, player insights. We got a built-in training staff with our new injury advisor powered by InsideInjuries.com. So get the RotoExperts.com exclusive Edge in-season fantasy baseball package now. Enter promo code FREERADIO at checkout for a special discount. As I said earlier, putting together some football stuff. George, I'm writing articles. I know you're writing articles. I've been up late every night trying to get it done. Offensive lines, trying to find movement there, see how that can help. You know what the crazy thing, as I give everybody quick previews before we dive back into this draft, and then we got Tony Sakata coming up in about 15 minutes, is, and we've talked about them as an overview, but when you look at the rankings, you'll see that the Tennessee Titans and what they've been able to do with their offensive line has transformed that team. And you hear the term exotic smash mouth, which is kind of a funny name for their offense, but Malarkey has really built this team in an old school way. And we talked about DeMarco Murray. A big reason for this success is how good this offensive line is. They had Taylor Lewan a couple of years ago, first round pick. They got Jack Conklin last year's first round pick. He ended up Pro Football Focus All Pro. They had Ben Jones last year, as well as a couple of other guys, and they're bringing back the entire offensive line this year. A big reason for a lot of offensive line success is the consistency. So you're going to see Tennessee Titans with all five guys that started a ton of games coming back for them this year, blocking for DeMarco Murray.
Yeah, this is a team that you mentioned. Didn't Chris Johnson, remember a couple of years ago, complain about the offensive line? That's why his numbers were so bad. Mm-hmm. They've certainly reinvented this team. You know, I guess once again, you get the quarterback. That's always the first thing you need there. And they know once you get the quarterback, you realize you build the other areas. You know, you build the offensive line. Your receiving core, they're trying to take care of that now. You got the running back, and the running back can be solid for years. Even when Murray's gone, then you'll have Derrick Henry. You know, Corey Davis can be that number one wide receiver. Rashard Matthews came on last year. You know, Delonte Walker, the all-pro tight end. Your defense is solid. Maybe not great, but solid. This is a team that's on the up and up. So I certainly like them. I like a lot of their players for fantasy purposes. You know, Delonte Walker, top five tight end. Corey Davis, I'm curious about. We drafting him later on in draft, especially. I'm more curious in dynasty leagues, of course. Rashard Matthews, he and Mariota, especially when it came to the red zone. Mariota liked to throw to him in the end zone. And DeMarco Murray, I said, I think he's easily a running back one.
Matthews went from a DFS star 2 years ago to a fantasy star a year ago. So he found some consistency in that offense. The players I left out on that offensive line, Josh Klein at right guard, who is a New England retread but found a sort of a second wind here in his career. And Quentin Spain started, I think, 14 games for them last year. Ben Jones was a free agent that came over from Atlanta. So those five guys are all back. The one thing I'd say about DeMarco Murray, George, as you mentioned before the break, he did have a ton of touches last year. A lot of people looked to that rule of 370. In some instances, we see it maybe a rule of 325 where there's a significant drop off. DeMarco Murray had 346 touches last year. He obviously produced in a big way. His production last year was in total 1,287 rushing yards. He had 377, so 664 yards from scrimmage with a total of 12 touchdowns. So he was everything and more that you got out of a draft pick last year.
Yeah, I mean, he was fantastic last year. I was banged up a little bit, and that's the way Murray is. He's going to get banged up because he's a tall runner, and sometimes he runs too upright. So he's going to get those banged up times. But like I said, I think he's fantastic. I think the offense is only getting better. I think Tennessee is going to score points. Murray's a running back I certainly don't mind getting in the second round.
And I'll be the first to raise my hand and say I've been one of these people that's kind of doubted DeMarco Murray at points during his career. I was always waiting for a drop-off. Now, he said he's banged up, but he started 16 games last year. So, you know, he's in the lineup every week. Now, here's the funny thing about him. Dallas drafted him in 2011. His rookie year, he has nearly 900 rushing yards and 183 rushing yards. So he had over 1,000 yards from scrimmage. His second year, he was banged up in 2012. He got hurt. He only played in 10 games, 914 yards from scrimmage. Then 2013, he makes the Pro Bowl, 1,471 scrimmage yards, 10 total touchdowns. Then the 2014 year was the massive year. He rushed the ball nearly 400 times. He had 2,261 rushing yards. It was an MVP candidacy type of year from a fantasy standpoint. Then he goes to Philly, and it fell apart. But it fell apart to the tune of him still having over 1,000 yards from scrimmage on a limited number of touches. I guess my point is, and then last year, 1,664 yards. I guess my point is, like, I feel like DeMarco Murray still is a guy that's never just never going to get the credit for what he's produced. And I don't know why that is.
Well, I think because, once again, I think a lot of running backs, Dallas, offensive line, so they owed up the holes for him. You know, he couldn't get it done in Philadelphia. That's just the wrong system. That was just a terrible job of talent evaluation by Chip Kelly. You know, you have a running back who's a hit the whole runner, you run a stretch offense, not going to work. You know, so Murray's just not that. Tennessee seems to know how to use his skills again. Hit the hole. Oh, you know, he's pretty much a one-cut guy and hit the hole. So that's what Murray does well, and they seem to know how to use that very well. Like I said, Murray is a very good running back. Doesn't get you're right. He doesn't get enough love for whatever reason it might be, which is why I think he's going too low in drafts. People seem to be looking for a reason not to take Murray.
Yeah, I mean, if you take out the Philly year, he's been getting it done for five seasons. So this isn't any kind of a fluke. Granted, it's not all going to be what it was in 2014 with the huge year, but it never is. You know, guys have career years, and you just try to see what kind of success they can maintain. I think it is interesting because they did draft Derrick Henry with a reasonably high pick, and when they added DeMarco Murray, I thought they had, I think they thought they had a nice 1-2 punch, but once it got rolling last year, why would you mess with it, right? It was so good, and they were playing so well that they nearly won the division. And unfortunately, Mariota gets hurt and changed their fortunes at the end of the year. But that being said, DeMarco Murray, you know, if you can snag him here, I mean, look, Zeke Elliott, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. He was the 10th running back off the board in an experts draft. Gurley went right behind him. Lamar Miller. Jeez, I missed all of these guys, by the way. I'm an idiot. So, that was Elliott, Johnson, Bell, Gordon, Freeman, McCoy, Howard, Ajay, Fournette, and Murray. So, I trust Murray a lot more than Jay Ajay.
Oh, so do I. Then I like Murray more than Lamar Miller as well, or Todd Gurley. It's not even close to me. I want Murray. Like I said, I think people are still remembering the bad year in Philadelphia, or still worried about maybe Derrick Henry taking his job, even though there are no indications of this. You know, I think Malachi's come out and said it's Murray's job, saying nothing's going to change from last year. Listen, I don't know what it is. I think Tennessee's offense is only going to get better. What do you think, they're going to become the Green Bay Packers and throw the ball all over the field? No. They're not. You know, they're going to run the ball at Murray. I think the running game is actually good for them as well, because it means they won't let Mariota run as much. So I think you want to keep him. Really, I think you want to keep him in the pocket as much as possible. This is back-to-back seasons now. This man's gotten injured.
I'm going to have their offensive line ranked in the top three. That's how they're going to play this, and it's going to help the whole offense. Yes, they add a dynamic wide receiver to round out the offense, but they're still going to try and control this clock as much as possible. The one place they really struggled on the field last year is at defensive back, and you know, keeping people off the field is certainly going to help you, any team in that regard. So as we continue to go through it, George, wide receivers, we'll take a quick look at that and see how that played out. This was a standard league. Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, Odell Beckham, Mike Evans. No surprises there. T.Y. Hilton, I think we've seen now in a couple of mock drafts, he's crept into the first round for a lot of people, and this was a standard league, and he got drafted in the first round here. I took Michael Thomas. I do think Brandon Cooks leaving that offense makes Michael Thomas an even bigger focus. Does that make sense?
Focus, yes. I think people are way too high on him, though, because that's the problem. He's the focus of the defensive attention, too. That's the number one cornerback each and every week. Mm-hmm. We've seen receivers in the past have troubles going from the number two wide receiver to the number one. Now, I think Michael Thomas is a very good receiver. I think he will be able to make that adjustment, but I'm not taking Michael Thomas over A.J. Green. I'm not taking him over Jordy Nelson either, so I'd have him three spots lower.
Yeah. I'd say that's about right. And if I had my stuff together at the beginning of this draft, I probably would have done the same. I would have taken A.J. Green over him, but I got Michael Thomas and Jordy Nelson. I can't be upset about that. You're probably right. I think Jordy's got just a better track record, and with this change of pace, I just think also, if I'm trying to read between the lines, I don't know that the Saints would make that move if they didn't trust Thomas. Make the Cooks move. They didn't trust Thomas to make the move over to number one without hitting a huge snag.
Oh, I'd have to agree there. Yeah, I think they certainly believe in Thomas. But I think they wanted to move Cooks, too. I think they knew they were they eventually weren't going to sign him long-term. Cooks had caused some problems last year with Sean Payton. So I think they were looking to move him as well. New England paid the number one pick price. I think they were happy to send him on his way.
DeAndre Hopkins was the – let me see how many – 24th pick. So last pick in the second round. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13th wide receiver off the board behind Doug Baldwin, behind Brandon Cooks, behind a few other guys. You think that's about right? Expecting a bounce back here? No Osweiler, but gosh, it's either Savage or a rookie in Watson.
Sure, I think it's about right. I mean, he's a tough player to judge because we don't know who the quarterback's going to be. You already said it's Savage or Watson. I mean, Osweiler could not get the ball to him last year. I don't think this is Hopkins' fault at all. I think it's the quarterback situation. I think the quarterback situation is better this year. We saw that when limited time that Savage played last year, he does try to get the ball to Hopkins. We don't know about Watson yet. I would assume he does. I mean, you'd be silly not to, but we don't know that. So I think this is about where he went. 13th wide receiver off the board. I'm okay with this. You look at the receivers after him. Alshon Jeffrey, don't really trust him either. A-Rob with Bortles, they're going to throw the ball less. Keenan Allen, if he had the healthy ACL, always, you know, if we knew what he was going to be coming back from the ACL, maybe he goes above him. But I think this is where you have all the problem wide receivers are going in the same area.
Yeah, Allen, Thomas, Davante Adams. Davante Adams seems kind of low there. Tony double dipped with Davante Adams and Aaron Rodgers. Tony Sincotta did. I wonder if that's what he's talking about. Maybe I'll ask him about that after the break. Tony going to join us, talk some DFS baseball. Come back and join us on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Mike Blewett, George Kurtz, and our guest Tony Sincotta back after this. Back on Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Rocking Sunday. I'm sitting here in the man cave, Fantasy Sports Radio Network studio, in the shadow of Madison Square Garden, Midtown Manhattan, George. It's a beautiful spring Sunday as we head towards summer. We're not far away, but another exciting Sunday, a beautiful day to be alive, and a beautiful day to be here in New York City. How are things in your neck of the woods?
Wow, what a nice little touching little.
Yeah, I got
little,
energized little during that break. There, I got energized during that break.
It's a nice, beautiful little day. Yeah. It's nice and sunny. I'm in the city. It's nice here too, Mike. I'm not that far away. It's nice here too.
Yeah. My whole fantasy baseball team is hurt, so I need to be as positive as
join
I can
the
be.
Club.
Yeah, I know. We're all in the same boat. It's just frustrating. I don't really want to roster David Freese, but I have to out of necessity. Eric Hosmer's on fire, by the way. Did he make any of your Who's Hot articles these last couple of weeks?
No, he would have made the Who's Not for a while. I think he might have. I'm not sure if I ever.
Yeah, he was
on
terrible
there,
no, for had... April, but he's been in Fuego.
Yeah, that was strange. I wonder if they've done a study here about all the guys with WBC, because quite a few of them started off
That's
slow.
That's a great point.
He played with WBC, and he played well with WBC.
I know.
So it makes you wonder, would they United States win with the WBC? Did he lose that adrenaline? You know, winning that, and then opening day, okay, you still have the adrenaline, but then once the regular season starts, you lose that extra edge. Yeah, maybe actually he's been brought down a little bit. Whatever it is, maybe it's just Kansas City being in a big time funk and they're going to trade everybody. He's wondering where he's going to end up. But like I said, he's been extremely disappointing this season. I think in some ways, Mike, he's been, I guess, a fantasy owner's had sort of a disappointing career, as if we expected more from him, or maybe we over expected things for him. He's going to be a 20 to 25 home runs, driving 100 runs, steal 15 to 18 bases, sort of be Paul Goldschmidt light, and it hasn't happened.
Yeah, I mean, 2015, I'm looking back at it, he had 1893 for 297. That's the year that they won the World Series, obviously. Then last year he hits more homers and the average drops by 30 points. Now the average is back up to 304, but he's only got five homers. It was a slow start. Maybe he's not the 25 home run guy. You know, maybe he's going to hit in the high teens. As you've said many times about him, better baseball player than a fantasy star, but still, he has been really good here over the last month, and Hosmer has picked it up a lot. He is a guy that turned down a deal from them. He is headed towards free agency, so he would be a rental, really, for anybody that's looking to gain a piece here for a playoff stretch at the deadline, correct?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of players here for Kansas City. I mean, you think about it, Hosmer could get dealt. We all know that Herrera could get dealt, the closer. I think that will certainly can happen. Ian Kennedy or any one of their starters outside of Duffy, I think, could be traded. They even mentioned Lorenzo Cain, mm-hmm. You know, that he could be dealt. I think Kansas City, you know, sort of like Tampa Bay and all these other small market teams, realizes if they you're not going to win for a season or two, you're not going to sign these guys anyway, trade them as soon as you can to get as much value from them as you can, and you have to rebuild every 5 to 6 years when you're good. They still have to rebuild.
Yeah. Yeah, Kane, 3-for-4 yesterday with 3 RBIs. He did hit a homer. Jorge Bonifacio, I'm just going through the Royals since we're on the topic, but Jorge Bonifacio is another guy who's been white hot. People are saying that we had an article on Roto Experts that I was reading this morning about he's a guy that you should be looking at if he's on your waiver wire. So in any event, moving on, Tony's going to join us here whenever he can to talk DFS.
Having his bagel right now.
Yeah, he's Fantasy Bagels and Baseball at 10. He'll go to 12. After him, we have Al Melchior Fanrag Fantasy Baseball. It's 12 to 1, and then producers from 1 to 3. So, George, I'm going to pause for a second while Tony connects. the Nashville Predators come from behind last night, score three goals in the second period, and they close out the game 4-1. So they make the Stanley Cup Finals interesting for you and Pete Considori.
Yeah, like I said, there's an old saying in sports that a playoff series doesn't really start until a home team loses a game. Now, Pittsburgh's held serve. They win their first two games at home. If Nashville does the same, they win. I think the game is tomorrow night. With the NHL, I never know, and TV. But if they win tomorrow night, series tied to two, and it becomes a best of three. Sooner or later, you know, Nashville's going to have to beat Pittsburgh at home. You could have made the argument, and I would have certainly bought in, that over the in Pittsburgh, six periods, Nashville outplayed Pittsburgh with five of them. But but Matt Murray stood tall. You know, and a goaltender in the NHL can win you a hockey game more than any other sport. Maybe a starting pitcher in baseball is the same way. But pretty much a goaltender, if he's not letting the puck in, you're going to win the game. You know, and Matt Murray was playing that well. It's funny, though, with Murray. I had Chris Mitchell, who's he's a hockey fan, but not a big-time hockey fan. Actually texted me last night after the game, does this mean Marc-Andre Fleury plays game four? Why? Because Murray had one bad game. I mean, Murray's their starting goaltender. No, he's going to start game four. Fleury's the clear backup there, so I don't think they're going to switch goaltenders, just like Nashville didn't switch goaltenders from Rene to Saros, after Rene did play poorly for the first two games of the series. So I'm not worried there. I think this is going to be a long series. I think it's going to go 6-7 games. I do expect Pittsburgh, though, to eventually win it out.
George, you said the series doesn't start until a home team loses a game. What if the home team never loses a game, like we've seen in some series? Then what?
Yep. Then the series is over.
Then the series never got started. I guess game seven, you have to make an exception. All right, nobody lost a home game yet, but it's game seven, so you got to be on edge. So hopefully we get there in hockey. I might get a chance to watch some of that. Basketball, obviously, you know, Warriors, Cavs, all that good stuff. It was not a fun game to watch in game one. I think people are panicking. Yes, I do think the Warriors are a lot better, but in any event. So Tony Sincotta joins us now. We're going to talk a little MLB DFS. But Tony, the first question I wanted to ask you, so seven players hit Grand Slams in Major League Baseball yesterday. That's a Major League record. Do you think that those players, since their Grand Slam breakfast is so wonderful and delicious at Denny's, do you think they can go in the day after they hit a Grand Slam and get like a free breakfast at Denny's?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure everybody's going to jump in and grab one of those, because I love those, too. It's amazing. Do you think they would have to bring their baseball card? Because I'm sure Thelma
they have to
no
wear
idea.
Their uniform.
Yeah, because how are they going to know who Travis Shaw is?
That's right. Exactly. Or Mike Zunino. I mean, you got to – what are you going to do? You show your MLB PA card? I think you'd have to wear the whole uniform, George.
How proud are you to ask Tony Sincotta an off-the-wall question?
I thought of it. I thought of it as it was coming together. So, yeah, I'm happy that I got a chance to put that together, yes. Proud as a peacock. George, you can ask me a question if you like.
You get bacon and sausage with that, too. That's amazing.
But I'm not a sausage fan. Can I get extra bacon?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Denny's is there to please you.
Yeah, that's just what I think when I go to Denny's. That
customer's always right.
All right. On to DFS. Tony, we got Chris Sale at the top of the list today.
Yes.
12,800 on DraftKings, a huge gap between he and the number two starting pitcher in Justin Verlander at 9,600.
Yeah, I like both those matchups, too. You got the Baltimore Orioles, who are not as great offensively. You're looking at it. Verlander's there. If I didn't want to go there, if I wanted to save a little money, which I'm probably going to have to use, there's no way you can use these two guys on DraftKings, so you're going to have to find one cheap guy to go with it. And I think the guy is Jeff Hoffman, the Colorado Rockies pitcher, against the San Diego Padres. So you're doing both there. You're picking on a poor offensive team. And secondly, Hoffman, when he's had his spot starts in Major League Baseball, he's pitched very well for the Colorado Rockies, as has most of their staff pitched well all season. And this game's in Petco Park, so I would pair one of those two guys with Jeff Hoffman.
All right, good for there. I mean, I would like to start Luis Severino today, or I'm interested in Stroman as well against the Yankees, though, but I hate starting anyone in Toronto in that bandbox of a ballpark. Stroman got lit up by the Yankees last time. Do you have any interest in either one of these guys?
You know, Severino's a guy that you can pitch. I agree with you. I would not pitch a guy in Toronto, but here's the thing with Severino is, even if he allows runs, he's going to get strikeouts, so it's not going to be a total wash no matter what you do with him. But he is high-priced at 9,100, so I would probably just jump up and go with Verlander over Severino in that matchup. So I probably would not use Severino. But I think he can. I don't want to use Stroman, though. Stroman's got more strikeouts this year than he has to in the past. But against this Yankees offense, he does keep the ball on the ground, but not enough strikeouts there in case he does allow a few to get out of the ballpark.
A couple of guys throwing here that may not be in the best of matchups. Chris Tillman going against up against the Sox and Sale today, George. Tony, that's a huge, tall order for him. Is he somebody you'd be looking to attack and stack some Red Sox against?
Yeah, he's a fly ball pitcher, so he definitely suits well for the Boston Red Sox. I think a lot of people use the left-handed bat in Andrew Benintendi, and he's a guy that has been struggling so much over the last 40 days that I would probably not use him, and I would use some of the right-handed bats in Mookie Betts and a Hanley Ramirez or other guys in the middle of that batting order. Yeah, the Boston Red Sox are the team that absolutely people go. And I think that you're going to see a lot of Detroit Tigers today. Holmberg, one of the pitchers that's been touched up, a left-handed pitcher. You're going to see Miguel Cabrera, Nick Castellanos. All those guys will be in play, and they've put up some runs this weekend against the Chicago White Sox.
Yeah, one Red Sox player I wouldn't mind putting in there is Jackie Bradley, who's been hitting well of late. And Tillman is just he's a home run waiting to happen there. So I think I wouldn't mind going with him. How about Justin Upton? I think J.D. Martinez is pretty close to a must as well.
Yes. I think what you'll see is a lot of people. You're allowed five players from a single team. I think people will use their five players to get in Detroit Tigers.
Tony Edinson,
yeah, I would agree.
Edinson Volquez obviously puts on a show yesterday. Is Tyler Pill today's Edinson Volquez?
I don't think so. But I think Tyler Pill reminds guys if they're going to be active with the lady they love and they're a little older, maybe I need to go to the pharmacy before I meet her.
That's good. That's a nice. That's your
they
PSA.
Need a different kind of pill.
Yeah, certainly.
A little blue pill.
There's a lot of pharmaceutical help that you can get from your local pharmacist, so we appreciate that. Thank you, Tyler Pill, for serving as a PSA on this Sunday. Tony back with Cha-Cha at the top of the hour. Thanks for joining us today, Tony. George and I will be back to close it out. Back with Mike and George to close out the show. Thanks for joining us on this Sunday morning. It's 2 hours up and 2 hours down. Tony, nice enough to join us. He's bringing Cha-Cha into the mix here in about 5 minutes. They'll be doing Fantasy Bagels and Baseball here for the next 2 hours. Al Melchior, FanRag Fantasy Baseball, and then the producers, Pete Considori and Chris Pavona from 1 to 3. Pete, I assume you guys are focused a little bit on hockey. Anything else on the docket for today?
As usual, we're going to go over my fantasy baseball team that I auto-drafted, which I'm going 6-2, which I find very funny. We're going to be doing pizza topping rankings. So anything pizza you like toppings. To do on, yeah, pizza toppings. Yeah.
So the one thing I'll say about pizza toppings, George, is that I feel that meatball is criminally underrated. Many people go with sausage and pepperoni. If you're going to get pepperoni, just go meatball. It's a far better topping. It's more filling, but it also adds a lot more flavor. Pepperoni is just easy because it's old hat. That's sort of how I feel about it. So if meatball isn't high on your rankings, you guys are doing it wrong.
No, it's funny. Going to be up there.
Go ahead, George.
I like pepperoni and I like pizza, but I don't like pepperoni on my pizza.
I sort of get what you mean. You know, something that I was not normally part of my repertoire, but has become in the last year, I go a little bit of red pepper flakes on there. I wouldn't call it a topping. It's more of almost an accoutrement. George, I know you love that word, but it's not something you don't order it with the red pepper. You just throw it on there. So I like a little heat on the pizza where I didn't used to.
Not me.
Yeah. All right.
No. I meatball. I think you're absolutely right, Mike. It's like getting a good meal then.
Plus, that's
maybe
what I'm saying.
Eat four slices then.
That's right.
So, I would love meat. Chicken. I'm a big Joe. I like getting my specialty slices, little chicken parm slice, little chicken, little extra sauce.
There you go.
That's
right.
Making me hungry.
Yeah, that's
right. We got bagels and a pizza now. This is great.
That's right. We're full service operation here. So good stuff, Pete. We'll be sure to listen in. And you can catch any of our shows live or on demand. So make sure you download the FNTSY app and listen to us anytime, anywhere. You can wrap up this show. We touched a lot on the NFL. The big MLB stories of the day yesterday, the Astros won 9 in a row, George, with the first of 40 victories. They are on cruise control right now.
Yeah, like the Nationals, their next important game is in October. I mean, these two are really, if you think about it right now, these two may be on a collision course to eventually face each other. Oh, I'm sure Washington won't make it. They always choke when it matters. But Houston, I still think they should make a deal for another starting pitcher. You wonder if they will by the deadline. Quintana really has pitched poorly. So the White Sox may be in some trouble there trying to squeeze all the value they can out of him. It's looking like they should have traded Quintana in the offseason when he had his value was the highest.
Yeah, I mean, they're 40-16. They're playing 7-14 baseball right now. That's incredible. The Yankees are playing way above their heads, 32-21, 604 ball. They're way behind. I mean, the Astros have a 12.5 game lead, and everybody else in that division is below 500. To think that the Angels are in second place there, as bad as they've been, is kind of crazy. The Mariners obviously besieged with injuries. The one thing I would say, we hit the 7 grand slams yesterday. That was a huge highlight. Hopefully we see a lot more action like that today. And George, I will say on the Edison Volquez thing, we laughed that he was really an unexpected guy. I did think it was kind of cool, the storyline. He was very good friends with Yordano Ventura, who tragically died in a car accident earlier this year. He was obviously a big part of the Royals 2015 championship. They were very good friends. It was supposed to be his 26th birthday. It would have been his 26th birthday yesterday, and he sort of dedicated the day to him, including a post on social media before he went out there, and he pitched to it's one of those kind of magical things that happens, and he dedicated the game to him.
Yeah, he did dedicate the game. I think you mentioned Jose Fernandez as well.
Yeah.
Both pitchers died tragically last season.
Yes.
It's a great story. I said no one would have ever guessed that Edison Volquez was going to throw the first no-hitter of this season.
Yeah.
I actually have him in one of my deep keeper league, but I don't believe I started him this week.
Yeah. Can't blame you for that. So hopefully he can take that and run with it and continues to improve upon his season. Thanks for listening today. It's 2 hours up, 2 hours down. Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning, passing it off to Tony Cicada and Cha-Cha. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next Saturday.